Welcome. You're listening to the Grow Ortho Podcast, presented by HIP. This podcast is dedicated to orthodontists who want to stand strong in their market and be leaders in their community. Now, on to today's show. Hey, Dr. Ethan Larson, thanks so much for coming on Grow Ortho today. Super excited to have you.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
So for those watching or listening, just kind of start at the beginning, where you are now, and then what made you want to go into orthodontics?
Well, name Ethan Larson. I've been practicing since 2011, I guess I graduated. So where I'm at now is down in Arizona, down in a town called Gilbert, Arizona. And just moved recently in the last year and a half. But ultimately what made me want to be an orthodontist is it was in the family. Like my dad was a orthodontist and he was in the Air Force. So he would start off in dentistry in the Air Force and then went to University of Washington for ortho residency. So that's a big part of it. In fact, growing up in college, I did all the lab work for him. So that was really my foray into the ortho world, is making Holley retainers, expanders, suck down retainers, all that fun stuff. But it really opened my eyes into the world of ortho. And so that made it that much easier to make that decision when deciding between medicine or dentistry of which way to go. A couple of my brothers went the medical route, but I decided to go dentistry as well as one of my other brothers as well.
Growing up, you know, with a dad in the profession, how early did you know this is something that really interests me?
Actually, not until, even with doing the lab work, I wasn't totally sold on it until in college. Mm-hmm. I really didn't even think about it too much. I'm sure that's pretty common for a lot of kids, not thinking about what they want to do when they grow up or not having serious considerations. You know, I want to be a firefighter. I want to be a whatever. But for me, I never really thought about it much until I started doing that lab work, and that really opened my eyes as far as how much fun it was in the ortho world, how much change and impact they're having in those kids' lives. So that was a lot of fun to see. So for me, that was the eye-opening spot is in college for sure.
So talk through like residency and then getting started in your practice.
Yeah, residency. That was, so a little bit about me. I have a wife and four kids. My oldest is in college now. Being that I'm in my 40s, you can do the math. We started pretty early. Got married when I was 20 years old. My wife is 18. Had a kid shortly thereafter, Ruthie, our oldest. And so dentistry in dental school, before I even started, we had one kid. And at that point, we're like, okay, we're going forward. We're going to have, we don't want her to just be, even though we knew it would be tough, we didn't want her to be 7 years old and having a brand new baby. So we wanted to have, Ruthie, being with the rest of the family there. So we, shortly into dental school, my wife got pregnant. And so then every 2 to 3 years after that, we had kids. So had Chandler in dental school, had Olivia my first year of residency, and Austin my final year of residency. So we were definitely focused on the family side of things, which was nice in some ways because there was no going out on the weekends, didn't have money for it.
Yeah.
things were really, really tight during that time to help support things financially. Continued a lab business, did a lab business during dental school and ortho. So we would get those appliances. I would study, but then oftentimes from about 10 o'clock till 2 in the morning, I'd do lab appliances to, just make some extra money because I just didn't want to come out with the amount of debt. I wanted to be able to afford a practice coming out. So I just worked hard at keeping that debt load as low as possible. And that meant those sacrifices, oftentimes with sleep. Just made it through. It's all about focus on, I feel like survival, honestly. That was my dental school and ortho years. Yeah. Made some incredible friends, still keep up with a lot of them. But a lot of it was focused on survival, as I'm sure a lot of people can attest to.
I think a lot of people can, and then there's the camp who doesn't, or can't. But I think a lot of us, obviously perform our best when our back is against the wall, because then it's like make it or break it. There's no option. You know what I mean? We hear across lots of industries, and it's kind of in culture of, especially nowadays, like, we'll see if we want to have kids later. We're working on us. We have our own goals. You kind of did it the opposite, which is admirable, especially to me. What was kind of your thought process back then of having a family? And, you know, you grew what I guess would be called a pretty big family now, you know, most people having maybe one to two kids tops.
Right.
What was kind of your thought process around that and building the family unit?
Was to understand a question with the thought process on why to have four kids,
well, like,
or in the order that we did it.
Yeah. Like, I mean, just in getting married early, starting to have kids pretty much out of the gate, like, was that something that you always wanted to do when you started to do it?
Yeah.
You know, how was it, like, kind of part of your mission, or was it? And, like, were you thinking about kind of legacy or not? Were none of those things in your head? I'm just kind of curious, like, if we were to roll back time, like, what were you thinking about, and, like, what was the journey like for you?
Yeah, it was nothing as sophisticated as that. I saw my wife, and I thought she was incredibly attractive and good looking, still do. And
yeah.
We ended up getting pregnant at that age. So there was nothing sophisticated, no planning, no getting together and setting out our legacy. It was like, well, we're in it. You're pregnant at 18 years old. We're 20 years old, and I was 20 years old, and let's go. Which for us was quite a challenge in the sense that we grew up in the faith, we grew up Christian. Of course, still am. That didn't affect it at all. In fact, it just grew our faith. But that was challenging, you know, from a family standpoint, from a life standpoint. So there's so many difficulties, and I just tip my hat to what Dahlia was able to do, being pregnant at 18, going through that, being a wife of a dentist, dental student who was hardly ever there.
Yeah.
And then ortho as well. It was really tough. We can look back at so many times and blessings of where we had no money. And just, you know, just one of those situations where things just popped up. You know, we got a reimbursement check from an insurance company. I don't know if that is exactly it, but I do remember, you know, food being dropped off when we weren't expecting it, money just showing up when we weren't expecting it. But as far as the legacy, God has his plans, and it worked out well. It's not the way I would have written it, but that's okay. It still worked out to a beautiful spot where we're at now. And just, I wouldn't redo it in any other way. So yeah, with the four kids, we just knew. You know, we knew at two, we weren't done. We knew at number three, Olivia, she was a handful, had a lot of sleep apnea issues when she was younger, and just wonderful, wonderful young woman now, but she was tough for the first couple of years. So we were pretty sure after three, we were done. And then we got pregnant with Austin, and just kind of set the stage a little bit during that time. I mentioned the lab work of what that was doing. I tried out this crazy, and my fellow residents can say it was crazy. It was crazy, but kind of an Ironman sleep schedule where I would not sleep the first night. So from Sunday night to Monday night, I wouldn't sleep at all, just do lab work all the way through the night. And then each night from then until the end of the week, I'd only do 4 hours of sleep and try to take one or two 15-minute naps during the week. And as you can once you get on it, it's still miserable. You still hate your life, but before you even get on it, it's even worse. So with that, it allowed me to get the lab work done that I need to get done. So it was a mercy in the sense I was able to do it, but not advisable. So when we found out in December that you know she was pregnant with Austin, and I remember that so vividly. I just looked at her and said, "All right, we can't even talk about this," because what happened in December and for the next 4 months is that all the residents at the school I was attending, University of Alabama, they had to get done with their patients, which meant that from January to April when they graduated was the busiest time of my whole I was trying to do dental school, and sometimes I was putting out 30 to 40 Holley retainers in a week. So I was almost working a full-time job and doing dentistry.
Wow.
Which was nice financially, you know, to make it a little less stressful for Dolly, but it was intense, a really intense time. So we didn't even mention it or talk about the fact that she was pregnant for the first 3 months that she was pregnant. It was just that intense of a time.
Last question around family is, you know, from when you started until now, what's your thought process now around the family, kids? Like how has that changed with kind of growing, getting older, and having kids that are kind of how old is your oldest?
Yeah, my oldest is 20.
Yeah.
So she will be in a couple of weeks.
An adult, you know, what's it like now versus then?
Well, back then we were kind of wondering, you know, like I mentioned before, we were kind of thrust into it. We were jealous at times of other, you know, couples not having the same stresses. Now I feel like we're on the winning side of things for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Just with, you know, being in our 40s, you know, our kids are in college or high school age. As far as for the timing of it, I can honestly say there's no perfect time. We've talked about, Dolly and I have talked about that multiple times. Everyone wants to say like, well, just let me get this set up or this set up or this set up. My belief is that there's no perfect time. Might be better times but there's still just no perfect time to start that family. And no regrets. I mean, you know, just as far as us with four kids, we felt like that was the right number for us.
Yeah.
And they're truly, absolutely a blessing from that standpoint. I would say the advantage now is that we're still really young as they get older. And that's been a really fun to just be, as they get older, to be more their, I mean, you're always a parent, but there's a time where, you know, the parent becomes less and less and become more their friends.
Yeah.
And that's for sure happening with us. And that's really fun to see.
That's awesome. Yeah, I know. I can speak for myself is when we started to have kids, which was my daughter's 5 and a half. So, and then my son was just born like less than 3 months ago. You know, it teaches you so much that you, things you wouldn't even think about prior to having kids. And it's just an incredible experience. So anyway, just curious around that, because I think it's kind of cool that you kind of did everything at once. You didn't try and come up with this super strategic plan. And like you said, typically for most people, there's no perfect timing. So, you know, the lessons that you can learn and the growth that you can have from, I mean, it sounds like you guys had a really challenging life in some ways, and I can
kind of
relate to that.
Yeah, in some ways it was challenging. It was a blessing. And to your point, kids are that. They refine you, for sure. They're mirrors, oftentimes, of what you do really well and those things that where you fail, honestly. And that's where grace and forgiveness is, you know, because it's just, we need that from our kids, and they oftentimes need that from us as well.
Yeah, 100%. So you finish residency, then you go to Oregon. Is that right?
Washington, yeah.
You go to Washington. Yep. And what was the practice like when you first went into Washington, and then what did you grow it to?
It was a great practice. It'd been there for 35 years. A guy by the name of Greg Sutherland, a mentor to me, just a wonderful person first, and then an incredible orthodontist second. Had a great team, and really, again, just, you know, God just put us together. I was actually flying up there from Alabama to Washington to look at another practice, I was going to buy. And while in the airport heading up there, that opportunity became available, and I applied real quick and just changed the plan so that way I could go meet with them.
Wow!
And after the weekend, it was maybe a 4-day trip. After the weekend flying back home, I just told my wife, like, this is where we need to be. And it worked out. We started talking. One thing that I thought was really, really nice, and I plan to do in the future as well, is just, you know, we just started talking about every 2 weeks, you know, during the process, because we had about a year to go before I graduated. And we just started talking every 2 weeks because a lot of things can get in your mind. Oh, is he still interested? Oh, am I still interested? So questions come up. What do you do for this? So it's really beneficial to do that and just keep those lines of communication open. But I joined up with that practice in 2011 with the plan of taking it over in 2 to 3 years. And that happened. After 2 years, I bought the practice and he worked with me for about 4 months and then rode off into the sunset. And we're still good friends, still talk. But he, you know, he, I think wisely knew that it was going to be best if he wasn't there around too much after the transition. So then after that, that was down in Washington, about 7 miles away as a crow flies, but the way it worked out was about 40 minutes away. So I bought that practice in 2013 from Greg Sutherland, and then in 2016 opened the second practice, just about 40 minutes away. And same team, we would travel from one location to the other and just see patients. We were open Monday, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays, and then Thursdays were admin days. But had those two locations, and things were going great. And then, of course, as we know, world kind of changed back in 2020. And just for us, a lot of people, just worked right through it just fine. But for us, it just made it in such a way that it was no longer the spot for us to continue to practice and live life up there for Dolly, myself, and the kids. So in 2022, we sold those practices and moved down to Arizona. But yeah, that practice was amazing. We loved it. It was just, didn't wish we had to sell it, but still feel like we made the right choice by moving down here and still communicate with that team up there. As far as like what we grew into, it was a thriving practice. It was a wonderful practice that we had. I mean, as far as production stuff, I think we got it up to small by some people's standards, but we got it up to being, annual recurring revenue, about $4 million.
Amazing.
During that time.
Cool.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for listening. If you're an orthodontist or dentist who would like a structured course to train your scheduling team, go ahead and click and check it out. We've basically got everything you need, and we'll also send you this book to go along with the course. But it's a complete course that goes through how to approach the scheduling or front desk role, scripts that are needed, processes that are needed. And we've really been able to extract that from the top 1% of orthodontic practices in the nation. So hope to see you in the course. Thanks so much for watching. For somebody thinking about doing that, obviously, you already gave a pearl of talk to the doctor, established doctor, practice owner every 2 weeks. What are maybe some of the things that blindsided you a little bit and maybe in hindsight you wish you would have known?
And joining up with the practice.
Yeah, just like acquiring a practice, acquiring a team.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't think about things like leadership or, anything to do with the how they're going to get team buy-in, things like. So I'm just kind of curious, like, what were some of the things that the challenges that came up that you guys had to work through?
Yeah, the challenges, when we were together, were just, who's leading the ship? Mm-hmm. That was the biggest part of it. It's just having that clear communication, which I feel like we achieved that well, but having that clear communication of, who's still calling the shots, even though Dr. Larson's here to take over, what's going to be the situation as far as, who answers the call. The challenging things I would say that, I faced back then, and I don't think it's any different now, would be managing to your style. And that is to understand who you are and managing to that type of personality type. You can't be a doctor that you see down the road. You have to figure out how you manage. And for me, that's with a good bit of humor and sarcasm. We have a lighthearted, less serious type of practice, but that comes with challenges as well as people knowing when to be serious and to be make sure that we're still being professional while doing those things. So I would say when I first took over the practice, the main thing I remember was the stress that came along with just realizing there was no safety net, just being an associate. I didn't have to answer all those questions. Now, all of a sudden, I wasn't just an orthodontist. I was a leader and an orthodontist. And oftentimes, you know, that was about a leader 80% of the time, orthodontist 20% of the time. So I think that those are the stresses that handle that a lot of people have to learn how to focus and master over the years of how to do both, how to be a master clinician, how to be a wonderful leader, how to always be on. You are for your patients, you are for your staff. You can't, it feels like you can't really have a bad day. And that's the tricky thing of being, you know, wearing all those different hats. And mm-hmm. that was a struggle, you know, and just to, I would guess, say a little bit of struggles that, you know, kind of show a little bit of what I went through during that time. I had a wonderful staff when I took it over in 2013, but they weren't quite my staff, if you know what I mean. But they're still wonderful people. And so I went from a staff of 13 down to 6 and then built it back up. And those were trying and difficult times. And I would say some of those needed to go and some of those I just didn't have the leadership or ability to be able to mentor them and to guide them and to be, because they were truly looking back at, you know, we all make mistakes and I made more than my share. Yeah. And that was a big part of it, looking back at it. It's just, no, I should have been able to lead them through that difficult time or through that time of transition. So it is quite a challenge to be a master at that. And I tip my hat to those people who can do it really, really well, because it's a challenge. And that being said, there's quite a bit of, I think a lot of people will look down on being an associate or not being the doctor. And I don't think that's the case at all. There's a lot of challenges with being the owner of a practice.
Yeah. Yeah. You probably had to roll back over to your insane sleep schedule during the, the time where you went down to 6. Yeah. It's so cool, you know, as a business owner, and I always try and look at it as I'm just getting started, but to kind of see where you were and just, you know, your growth journey, you know, of like, you know, I can relate to you kind of working through the night, and in the beginning I was spending no time with my wife and in debt and lived in an apartment owned by my father-in-law, all these things. And now there's new challenges, right? You get out of that and you have growth, and now there's in a lot of ways bigger challenges if you want to continue to grow. Lifestyle wise, it may not be as hard, but you know, there's more at risk because back then, like, I didn't have anything. So if I blew it, well, just start over. And so, you know, it's just different, but, it's so cool to kind of see just the growth and the journey and then the people who come along with you, their growth too. So,
yeah.
Okay. So you transitioned from that practice. So you sold it.
Yep. Sold it.
Then you guys came to Arizona, and some people may have just said, hey, I'm going to stay retired and be done and maybe take like an associate gig just to stay busy. That's not what you did. So kind of share with everybody what you're doing now.
Yeah. Well, that's what I told my wife. And shortly into it, Dolly said, you know, about 2 months into it, like, no, you need to get back out there and do some stuff, because you're driving me nuts. Mm-hmm. So, I have one of those personalities that's pretty intense, I guess. And, or so I've heard. I think it's perfect, my personality, but you know, whatever, they're all wrong.
Yeah.
So yeah, got back out there, found a practice to buy. And I just figured, you know what? I just, you know, got done talking about all the challenges with running a practice. Why not go out there and buy a practice that's 3.5 hours away from where I live. And, might have some challenges as far as the way it's set up or run or systems wise. Let's just jump into that and try to figure it out. And so that's what I did, you know, in all my wisdom, I didn't stop to think too much about it and bought a practice, which, you know, it's moving along. It has its challenges for sure. And it turns out it's really tough to get culture established and get, you know, things moved in the right direction when you live 3.5 hours away. Mm. And also, it turns out I love to be home around the family. So it's hard to be out there. So I go out there every other week, but, and see patients Monday, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays. But that was the first thing I did. So with selling the practice in Washington, I traveled back and forth for Goodwill. until June of 2022, sold it February 2022, and flew back and forth till June. And then in September is when I had a 2.5 month break type of deal. So in September, I bought the practice, and that's 3.5 hours away. And then just in case that wasn't enough, I decided the next month in October, I'd buy a building too and start getting that set up so that way that can be my second location, which is now open. You know, it's been open for about a month. But yeah, it turns out I just jump all in and figure it out on the other side. So that was kind of my journey for the last year and a half, is flying back and forth to Washington, then coming down here and getting some practices established. And I don't know if that would be a recipe. If you're writing another book, Luke, just I don't know if that would be what we would set up as far as, you know, the chapter of how to set up and start up two more practices.
It seems like you...
It's been a lot.
Yeah, it seems like you like a good challenge, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, or I just don't think through it enough and I just jump all in.
Yeah.
One of the two.
Yeah, would you consider yourself now more entrepreneurial or...
Just, yes.
Okay, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay.
Yeah, I really enjoy that side of things. Not that I don't love the orthodontics. I do truly enjoy that as well. But I wake up where I think about the entrepreneurial, the business side of things more. And everyone has their tilt, you know, which way that, and there's no right or wrong. But yeah, that's definitely the way I lean.
And then that's how we got linked up. So in that transition process, we started talking. And then in terms of growth in the practice that you acquired, just kind of like, you know, share what you're comfortable with sharing. But what is kind of future growth look like in growing production?
Future, I mean, looks, I would say, I mean, you've seen some of the numbers as well. I'd say it still has a lot of growth available to it. So a little bit of what it was doing production-wise is right around 900 when I got it. This year we did, we're going to end up at 135.
Amazing.
So 40% growth right around there.
Yeah.
If I'm doing the quick math in my head. So about 40% growth production-wise. Collections are taking some time to catch up as they normally do. But with that, that's just with starting things with ads mostly.
Yeah.
We've done some things with dentists, but we really haven't, you know, if we were to kind of break things down as far as external, internal, online, you know, ads type of stuff and dentists, we've pretty much just turned on the online side of things. And part of that is because I've been pulled with starting up the new practice. We haven't been able to, you know, launch all four different spheres of the marketing campaigns, but with that 40% growth. So who knows? Only God knows what the future holds, but I would say it's pretty bright from that standpoint. And the situation there is there's 60,000 people in that location, and there's one other orthodontist who's there only one day a week.
Hmm.
So it's there's not a whole lot of competition.
Yeah.
There's a lot of opportunity.
Yeah, I love areas and pockets like that where it's a little bit more rural.
Yep.
And from what we see, those are, to a large degree, kind of untapped markets, you know, because you can go to these big cities, and some cities I caution people to never even go to because it's like you got another orthodontist or three or four in the same building, you know, and so...
Yeah.
That's kind of neat. It sounds like your potential, like you said, is unknown, but seems very bright. You know, starting to piece this together and having multiple practices now, and you know, you may even start more locations or acquire more locations. What would you say kind of drives that? You know, being entrepreneurial, like, wanting to have more practices, liking the orthodontic side. I think you want to help people. What's your kind of inner drive and what keeps you going?
That's a good question. Sometimes I feel like it's unhealthy. I would say I just have to slow down my mind. So the inner drive on an unhealthy side of things would be from pride, would be from chasing money, would be from just not having, you know, just being calm, you know, if, and, you know, just, I know that just from, you know, years of talking to my wife, I have a very strong inner critic. So that's again, someone that's like just sitting there and just saying, you should do this, you should do that, you should do that. And there comes wisdom in when to tell that person to shut up.
Yeah.
And when to say, no, you're right, I do need to get out there and just get after it. So I would say I don't have an issue of, you know, of pushing myself hard. I rely on my wife and others around me to have that wisdom of when to slow down. So I have that natural drive, but as far as opening up practices, what my drive is for is I believe that we do, there's some excellent orthodontists out there who I've tried to learn from. I do believe we do above average for sure. I'm being humble. I think we do some really good orthodontics, but ultimately we're impacting lives with the people that we affect. So with growth, I've told my wife, and I think I've told you this as well, I'm not focused on the number of locations I'm going to, because I'm focusing on more on what we do as far as quality. So if that's two locations and that's all I can do and still have wonderful quality and a great team around me, then it's going to stop at two. If I can continue that on to 3 or 4 or 6 or 10, great. But I'm just going to take it one at a time and also challenge myself to make sure I'm not, I'm doing it for the right reasons and not chasing for pride or for money, because that's when you get in trouble for sure. So ultimately it's to do the best I possibly can. And that's it. To, you know, from my standpoint, it's to, glorify God in what I do and then, you know, just let the pieces fall where they're at. And that could be, again, like I said, that could be just a couple practices and be wonderful. It could be one practice, be wonderful. You know, not to ramble too much, but I definitely learned that from the guy I bought from. He had one practice, completely enjoyed life, loved life, and was wonderful orthodontist, wonderful boss, wonderful father. So if I start 3 or 4 or 10 and lose those things, then I've for sure, without a doubt, a loss of war.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's Earl Nightingale who, and I don't know if you know who that is. It's somebody I've listened to a lot. Old guy. He was big in like the 50s and 60s. But essentially, I'm paraphrasing, the most important things in life come basically free. And then the things that we have to pay for or work for, we start to value those things over the free things and neglect.
Yep.
You know, even our minds, you know, that's free. Our body is free. And then, you know, family and things like that. So don't ever neglect those things. And I think one thing that you brought up without saying it is chasing the wrong things. You never are really fulfilled if you don't have that purpose, you know?
Right.
So
well said.
Amazing. Well, hey, thanks so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it. I know people listening are going to appreciate this too. So thank you so much.
You're more than welcome. Thank you for inviting me on.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to learn more about HIP or any of the topics in this episode, send an email to hello@hipcreativeinc.com. That's hello@hipcreativeinc.com, or jump over to our website at hip.agency.